Freedom Rock?
Yeah, man.
Well, turn it up, man.
Don't touch that dial. My name is Pat Ford. It is my privilege tonight to fill in for that libertarian, Dan Fishman, on America's great AM 680, the Big 68, WRKO, on Liberty on the Air. Welcome tonight. It's a snowy night in downtown Boston, but the issues will be hot. A little bit about myself. First of all, my name is, as I said, Pat Ford, filling in tonight for the great Dan Fishman. I am a small L libertarian. I believe in self-ownership. On a daily basis, I challenge the cult of the omnipotent state and defend the rights of the individual. I'm a big L libertarian. Political parties are a necessary tool to facilitate real change in America today. I am proud to be the chairman of the Libertarian Party of the great state of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. I'm a voluntarist. I voluntarily give consent to be governed. A consent I reserve the right to revoke at any time. I'm a free market capitalist. Free market capitalism is the mechanism by which the individual can reach their full human potential. Conversely, I am not. I am not an incrementalist. Fundamental change must be radical in nature. Incrementalism only creates new barriers to real liberty. I am not a keyboard warrior. I picket, I protest, I testify, I organize. I believe in civil disobedience. Social media is typically an exercise in circular logic amongst an ever smaller mutual admiration society. I seek no amen choir. I am myself. If after this exercise you still want to engage, I can be found at the Coalition Talk Radio, which broadcasts on GoLocalProv.com out of Providence, Rhode Island, on Friday nights from 6 to 9 p.m. CoalitionRadio.us, Facebook.com/TheCoalitionRadio, and of course on the mighty, mighty Twitter at Coalition_Radio. Tonight we're going to dive into issues which require a little bit of maturity and a little bit of thought. I prefer not to engage in sort of the easy road on talk radio. I like to label myself as outrage porn free, civilly disobedient media. It's easy to do the typical show prep. Go to Drudge Report, go to the Boston Globe, the Herald, do your show prep on the way into the station and simply read off the headlines to see what kind of outrage you can gin up amongst the audience. I wouldn't be fulfilling my responsibilities to Dan Fishman, that libertarian, the host of Liberty on the Air, if I did and fulfilled the easy path. So let's talk about an issue that's germane to society right now, that's pervasive, that's everywhere. And of course, I'm talking about sex. Tonight, we're going to have a conversation about sex workers, their role in society, the challenges they face, and in an era when prohibition is, well, seemingly the norm. One would have thought that we would have learned the lessons of the 20s. One would have thought we would have learned from the lessons of the war on drugs, where consensual behavior amongst adults, whether it be in the form of a business transaction or merely of a social nature, should be paramount and part of the freedoms that we enjoy here in the United States. But as is the case in the war on drugs, which continues seemingly unchecked.
But we're winning that war, right? Right,
Pat? We're losing that war. Of course, let me introduce Matt.
Good evening, everybody.
Matt is the co-host here. He's the voice of maturity, the voice of reason here in the room. No, we are getting our butts kicked on the war on drugs. We have spent untold millions pursuing the reefer madness style of prohibition. Our current attorney general is doubling down on stupid when it comes to ignorance, blissful ignorance, and dwelling on urban legends about cannabis. We continue to ignore the Fourth Amendment of our Constitution by engaging in acts of illegal search and seizure in our cities. We've broken down any relationship whatsoever between the occupying force that is our police departments in so many cities and the residents and the citizens. We've created our own public health crisis by the willy-nilly use of opioids and by making a legal product like cannabis illegal so that it can be doctored with illicit drugs. We contribute to narco-terrorism around the world, but at the same time, we continue unabated down that course. So no, we're getting our butts kicked. I know. It's just.
I thought I'd read we were winning or something. Maybe I was reading it wrong.
No, that of course is the convenient fiction of the powers that be. There's a lot of big money being made off the war on drugs, as there is being made on the war against consensual sex activity. I'm not going to refer to it as prostitution. I'm going to refer to it as sex work and consensual sex activity between adults. As libertarians, and this is a libertarian show, unabashed, it is a liberty hour. We believe that, again, consensual activity between two adults without force, without coercion, is something that is beyond the purview of an overreaching government. That ultimately, let's be blunt, that the narcissists who currently run our government try to inflict upon us their own morality, they simply have not the power to do so. But what do you think?
If you're asking me, it's not something I would indulge in. Mm-hmm. I understand there is the age-old, you know, sort of question that people have sort of, or the old phrase, you know, why is it illegal to charge for something which is perfectly legal to give away for free? Mm-hmm. You know, is the old adage people talk about, which when you put it that way, sort of makes a lot of sense. I'm sure some of the conversation around it, why it is illegal, is based upon exploitation, forcing people into something, and I'm sure there's many conversations about it being demeaning towards the workers and the like, which may be the reason why it, I don't know if that's the reason it is, mm-hmm, illegal, but those are many of the things I would imagine most people would sort of point to.
Right.
Now, I believe Nevada is the only state that has it legalized. I could be wrong on that. In the United States.
No. Right now it currently is the only state that's legalized, and there is.
But that's only in counties, I believe, of populations of 100,000 or less. So Clark County, which Las Vegas is in, it is not legal in. You have to go outside of the larger population areas, and then I believe it is up to that county to either agree or disagree to make it legal or not legal. Is my understanding. That's the only, I think Australia has some legalized.
Mm-hmm.
I think other countries do. I don't know. This is actually not suit on my part.
Well, let's bring on someone who is expert in the field. She's an activist. She is a keen observer and has been instrumental, really, in advancing the cause of human rights within sex work, and is advocating for, I think, an interesting path forward for how we as a society can successfully integrate sex workers as part of really just normal life. Of course, I'm talking about Alex Andrews. She's a board member of SWAP, Sex Workers Outreach Project. A sex worker alumni herself, she's lived experience under criminalization of consensual sex work. She's the co-founder of SWAP Behind Bars and sits on the board of directors of SWAP as the North American representative. Alex has been working with men and women and trans folk who have been incarcerated, and has also experience in the sex industry, and works to reduce the shame, the discrimination, and stigma of sex work by showing up at everything from communities and town hall meetings, discussions on trafficking, and using herself really as an example to demonstrate that sex workers are just like everyone else. She's been called a watchdog of anti-trafficking activity and is committed to the unification of sex worker rights throughout the world. Alex, first of all, thank you for joining me on such short notice, and welcome to Liberty on the Air.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, let's. I think the purpose of this evening's conversation is to really to slay some urban legends and really come to the core of the issue. We've set the stage. I think that everyone in this studio and yourself agree that consensual activity between adults has no place being legislated, being interfered with by the state, by the government. But if you could give us a snapshot right now of I'll say, the state, if you will, for lack of a better term, of sex workers nationwide in the United States, what the challenges they face, and really what SWAP is attempting to do through its efforts to decriminalize sex work.
Well, sex work in the United States is criminalized, with the exception of a few counties in Nevada where it is legalized. Sex workers are asking that the worldwide full decriminalization of sex work be considered a worldwide policy per the Amnesty International policy that was written in August of 2016. Decriminalization means that it removes the criminal and civil penalties for both the buyer and the seller in a consensual sex work transaction. You know, sex trafficking is a horrible crime, and we have laws against that already.
Right.
Sex work is not sex trafficking. There's not fraud, there's not force, there's not coercion. So there's a huge difference between the two, but very often the lines get blurred. There's a very large gray area.
Let's distinguish for a moment, if you will, between the issues surrounding decriminalization and legalization. As someone who fancies himself a civil libertarian, at first blush, I would say that why not completely legalize? What in your mind are the issues that differentiate the two, and why are you advocating for decriminalization?
Well, legalization actually raises the barriers for people who are engaged in sex work, and it doesn't make it any more safer for them. Someone who is a legalized sex worker has to work in a legalized place where sex work is legal. That means that they have to go down to City Hall, they have to get a license, they have to sign documents, and they have to publicly come out as a sex worker, which is all fine and good while you're in the process of it. But if later on in life you want to make a different decision in the world that we live in, where it's criminalized elsewhere, it kind of paints a scarlet letter on your forehead, saying that at some point in time this person was a sex worker, and it can automatically lead to stigma, discrimination, and all of the things that that make it really hard to get around in the world. So decriminalization removes those barriers and makes it just to where people can't get arrested for a consensual transaction.
Right. But at the same time, in a sense, creating a filter from, we'll call it the vanilla world, where moral judgments are made by people in positions of authority that can have impact on everything from child rights to a future employment. Okay, I get that completely. Right now in the United States, typically, you would think that we would have, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, that the stench of prohibition, the failure of prohibition across cannabis at the turn of the 20th century around alcohol would present really a clear alternative to prohibition. We've seen the results.
Mm-hmm.
How is there a similarity between the, and I'll use the air quotes here, the unanticipated consequences of prohibition in the world of cannabis and drugs, and what's happening to people who are involved in consensual sex work?
Yes, there is. There's a lot. It's very easy to draw lines from the prohibition of alcohol, the prohibition of marijuana, prohibition of drug use in general, and the prohibition of sex work. In the United States, we are fully criminalized for sex work, and that is the same situation that we have in China, Afghanistan, Iran, a lot of other countries that have criminalized sex work completely. And, you know, I don't really think that those countries are what we want to set up our standards against.
And yet so often we do. Talk to me about Amnesty International and you know, effectively their take and human rights organizations like Human Rights Watch around the world and their reaction to really this hyper-aggressive enforcement of laws on, again, we keep stressing this, but laws on consensual activity. How did Amnesty weigh in?
You know, it's really interesting. Amnesty was hardly the first organization to come forward and recommend a policy on the worldwide decriminalization of sex work. As a matter of fact, they spent, you know, more than 2 years interviewing a lot of people from a lot of different sides of the issue. And even not all of the Amnesty International people agree that full decriminalization is what they were going to write to. But in the end, they decided that they recognized that sex workers all over the world faced a great amount of stigmatization, of discrimination, abuse, and they were unable to come forward and report crime against their person. They were unable to report sexual assault There were a lot of issues with the criminalization, and that's why they came out and wrote the policy for full decriminalization. It's not a license for sex traffickers to run wild through the streets. It doesn't free up pimps to become more to easily go about their business. It doesn't do that at all. It simply removes civil and criminal penalties for a consensual transaction between one buyer and one seller.
I want to take a step here, and we've been throwing the word prohibition around a lot.
That's a big word.
It is a big word, and one of the things it definitely evokes, I think, in most people's minds is the idea that something that was legal is now stopped. Like alcohol that was legal, we passed a, God knows how, an actual amendment to the Constitution that said you couldn't make it or sell it and what have you. Now, when we talk about it, we throw it around with sex work. It sort of brings the idea that this was legal until quite recently, and I'm no expert on the subject, so I'm curious, what, you know, how long has it sort of been, was there ever a time it was sort of legal, either in the United States or even in China or Afghanistan or other countries?
Prostitution has often been called the world's oldest profession because there are times throughout our world's history where it's not only been legal, it's been lauded. Sex workers were valuable members of the community. Sex workers were responsible for building lots of civilization because where sex workers go, that's where communities built up around. The Wild West is a good example.
Was it legal there? And then I don't know. This is not some sort of this is legitimately trying to understand.
I don't know that it was legal or illegal. I'm not sure that there were laws against it or before that. I'm not sure on that. However, I know that they passed laws to make it illegal. When women really started to flourish, and a lot of the moralistic sheriffs and preachers and all that sort of thing that started coming out and calling for it to be illegal.
We had a situation a few years ago in the state that I live in, Rhode Island, where through not pure legalization, but
accidental decriminalization.
Exactly. Through your typically poorly written Rhode Island law, a judge against, obviously, it was clear at the time, all his wishes, was forced to decriminalize what was referred to for so long as indoor prostitution. That is, as long as the act and the negotiations for said act took place inside, then there was no criminal activity accorded to that. Of course, the state at the time tried to use the typical approach, health laws, zoning laws, you name it, to fight it. Ultimately, it failed because, well, that's one of the reasons why it's the oldest profession. For the same reason that pornography is a multi-billion-dollar business. The most prurient style folks, well, somebody's using it and somebody's taking advantage of it. So, as so often is the case, there was the notion that somehow, and it was quite condescending and quite patronizing at the time as I watched this political action take place, that somehow by criminalizing it, it would be better for folks participating in it, both folks who were customers and folks who were supplying. That couldn't be farther from the truth.
Better
it?
If they don't do it?
No, it's safer because that somehow we, because of the very presence of the industry, that we were placing sex workers in harm's way, and sex and folks who were participating in it were seen as predators across the board. Are sex workers safer in an area where it's criminalized?
Absolutely not. Sex workers are most definitely in danger in an area where it's criminalized. Anytime that you have an activity that is criminalized, it pushes it underground and it creates kind of a black market. Mm-hmm. And that means that people do it around in secret and they don't want to get caught because they don't want to go to jail. And when you have it pushed underground like that, it can lead to a lot of violence.
Right.
And then on top of that, you have the institutional and the societal violence of stigma and shame that surrounds it. And then you have the added stigma and discrimination when someone goes to jail for it.
Do you think that stigma goes away when something's legal? Do you think the state needs to endorse it for the stigma to go away?
No, it doesn't go away. As a matter of fact, when it's legal, a lot of sex workers can be stigmatized and discriminated against based on the fact that they're a legal sex worker. We know of a lot of our sex worker friends in Nevada who have been discriminated against when they have had a run-in with law enforcement because they are a registered sex worker in Nevada. Because, even though it's legal there, they're still discriminated against in different environments.
Right, because ultimately, as long as there is this artificially imposed moral code that sits in judgment of folks who are, again, engaging in a consensual activity, the permanency of the record associated with that individual has the potential to literally haunt them for their entire lives, doesn't it?
Oh, it sure does. It sure does. And treating sex work as if it's the same as sex trafficking, it ignores the realities of sex work and it endangers the people who are engaged in it.
Right.
I mean, it keeps people from getting the help that they need.
Right.
A key goal of the sex worker movement and SWAP USA is to improve the sex working conditions. Mm-hmm. But it's just not possible when it's criminalized and when it's looked at as just another form of slavery.
Right. Now, I found it ironic recently there were reports of a number of hotel chains engaging in training to distinguish trafficking. Ironic that those same folks were not being trained to, if you will, be sensitive to the presence of other forms of illicit behavior. Other forms of, in many cases, child labor, child abuse, all the in my words, yes. Not my guess, the legitimate issues that are facing this country, as opposed to this ginned up outrage.
So I'm curious about that. Like, you don't. So they were training for.
I'm wondering how many of those hotel chains had their underpaid immigrant workers attend those trafficking trainings. To identify sex workers specifically.
Right.
Without a doubt, that particular training and the media surrounding it was specifically targeting sex workers. And it was targeting them and leaving them open for violence and for law enforcement to interfere.
We're going to take a quick break right now, but joining us on the line through the miracle of Skype and communications is Alec Andrews. She's a board member of SWAP, the Sex Workers Outreach Project. She's a sex worker alumnus herself. She's lived on experience under the criminalization of consensual sex work. And in our next segment, we're going to elaborate on this, but we're also going to talk about an organization that she's been fundamental creating. It's a outgrowth of SWAP, and it's something called SWAP Behind Bars. She also sits on the board of directors of SWAP here in the United States. Folks, if you're just joining us, of course, you're listening to Liberty on the Air. My name is Pat Ford, and I've been blessed with the opportunity to fill in tonight for that libertarian, Dan Fishman. A number of ways that you can watch or listen to this now and in the future, of course, on the website at WRKO 680. Of course, we invite callers in the next segment, 617-266-6868. We're handling a subject here that's let's just say, requires a certain level of emotional maturity. It can be twisted to be prurient in nature, but I think what we're attempting to accomplish here is a real analysis of the issues and perhaps at the same time, let's just say, slaying some urban legends, if you will, for lack of a better term. We're going to take a quick break right now, but stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back, Liberty on the Air, libertyontheair.com. My name is Pat Ford. Don't change that dial. I am filling in for that libertarian, Dan Fishman, the regular host, joining with my co-host, Matt, here.
Good evening.
We have on the line with us Alex Andrews. She is a board member of SWAP, that is Sex Workers Outreach Project. And also, I believe, joining us on the line is the man, the legend himself, that libertarian, Dan Fishman. Dan, welcome. Well, welcome to your show.
Thank you very much. I mean, it's not my show. I remember well when Ted Kennedy's office was Ted Kennedy was being replaced, and Martha Coakley said, "We're not going to elect a Republican into Ted Kennedy's seat." And Scott Brown said to her, "You know what? It's not Ted Kennedy's seat. It's the people's seat." Absolutely. My Liberty Show? That's not my Liberty Show. That's the people's Liberty Show. And I am so grateful to you, Pat, for the wonderful job you've been doing and keeping it going on right now. And there's a Liberty conversation that I've really been enjoying this first half hour.
Right. Well, Dan, I want you to say hi to Alex. Alex, I think we've got you on the phone as well. Dan is integral to the Massachusetts Libertarian Organization, as well as a player nationwide in Liberty. So this is actually Dan's show. So you folks have had. And Dan, do you have a question for Alex?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things that I've been talking about, actually, I'm down at the Young Americans for Liberty conference right now in New York City. And one of the fascinating conversations we had, so John Stossel was keynote speaker, and he talked about the fact that he's been advocating for legalizing sex work for a long time. But one of the things he talked about, he said, you know, I am not a government regulation guy, but I can see how there are certain aspects, especially when you talk about sex work, talk about the age of children who might be potentially in it, where there is a need for government regulation. I was wondering if there's been any sort of attempt to say, these are some of the regulations that we would want to have around sex work somewhere.
You know, one of the things that we keep trying to point out to people is that sex work is sex work, and it's not sex trafficking. We do not advocate for children to be involved in sex work. We do not advocate for young people to be involved in sex work. We are advocating for the full decriminalization for a consensual transaction between one adult and another adult. You know, there are already laws in place that protect children and protect people who can't make decisions for themselves on the books. We fully support the anti-trafficking idea that you can't force people to do stuff that they don't want to do, or force them to do it for a non-living wage, or force them to do it for no wage. We are not pro-trafficking. I don't think anyone's pro-trafficking.
That wasn't what I meant to suggest. More my question about it is, you know, John talked about the fact, he's like, you know, you can get 16-year-olds who want to go work at Walmart, they can get their parents' permission to do that. Is there any idea about some sort of, you know, either regulation or law that anybody has sort of proposed? Because, you know, I think most people would agree it ought to be legal to sell something that you can give away for free. But most people would also agree it's probably not an industry we want to see get children getting into. Has anybody, like, I mean, you know, in places where sex work is legal, let's say in Las Vegas or in Amsterdam, are there any sort of regulations in place that you think would be a good model for us to adopt in the United States?
Well, in the legalized model, you have a lot of regulations already in place. In Amsterdam, for example, there's the red light district. They have a lot of regulations in place that do protect the workers that are in that particular environment. What we're advocating for is for the people who are working outside of that framework, outside of that legal framework, to not be criminalized.
So, yeah, I guess not to cut you off. I'm just starting to sort of understand.
Okay.
I think some of what you're saying, in the sense that you're not necessarily looking for an industry. You're not necessarily looking for that. You're not looking to, you know, create like a chain of brothels in every state or whatever. You're just saying this 18-year-old end up, and this, you know, 18-year-old and up, these two legal adults can one of them can pay the other. And then, you know, they don't have, you know, you're not talking about having, you know, like a warehouse downtown where this all goes on. No. Although I'm sure you understand that, you know, something like that would definitely sort of.
And we have no problem with it. We have no problem with the legalized model where it currently exists. It's a good thing that there is a place where people can go that are able to engage in a legalized form of it. But that's not the majority of the industry. There's a large portion of the industry that is marginalized and can't get jobs at a legal brothel. They do sex work on the side, or they do sex work as a means of survival, or to put food on the table, or to feed their children, or to send them to summer camp, or whatever it is that they do. They do it as a means of survival. And we don't feel like that should be criminalized.
The ironic part here, if I can jump in, it's Pat, is that typically as libertarians, we argue for legalization. Ironically, in the legalization model currently in place, there is more I'll say, bureaucracy government creation than it is if there was just pure decriminalization. I think, you know, you've got the legacy and a track record and a permanent record to an industry that is still marginalized in this industry. And at the same time, legalization has created an environment, much like, say, cannabis here in Massachusetts, where the government's hyper-involved in it and it has created all these obstacles to entry. So here we have a situation where legalization is probably the less libertarian solution. Yikes. And please, Alex, jump in if you think I'm wrong. But, I want to take a moment. Can you describe, because I also want to spend some time in the time we've got talking about SWAT behind bars. But if you can give folks sort of a real portrayal of what I'll call the circle of economic violence that takes place once someone is caught up in the legal system as a convicted sex worker. If you can give life to some of the travails, then they get this Kafka-esque reaction to that one moment of being quote-unquote caught.
I wish I could tell you that it just started at conviction, because then you know, we could draw a line and we could say, here's where the problem started. But it's really not the case. Because of the criminalized nature of the work, if someone is arrested for, let's say, they're stopped because they are a street-based survival sex worker, and they're stopped because the police officer wants to harass them for being a sex worker or standing on a corner or whatever. And let's say that they find drugs on them, then they take them to jail, and now they've got a prostitution and a drug charge. Maybe they've got a couple in their past, so they end up doing a prison sentence for maybe a year. When they get out, they can't get a job, but if they go back and do sex work, they risk going back into that whole cycle again.
Right.
The discrimination of being a felon means that you can't get an apartment. You can't get food stamps in a lot of, you can't get a lot of public benefits. You're forever walking around and you're unable to live your life.
Right. And again, the irony here, the not so subtle irony, is that those folks who would advocate for criminalization and this ultra legalistic situation in order to quote unquote save the sex worker. Again, I'll draw the analogy with cannabis. The most dangerous thing about cannabis is actually getting caught with it, not using it. I want to talk to your project now. You've got two things actually I want to ask you. First of all, the reaction of the Me Too movement to women who are involved in the sex industry. Has the Me Too movement reached out to folks adequately, do you think? Or is there friction there?
Well, you know, more and more sex workers are starting to take to the Me Too movement as well. You know, it goes without saying that the Me Too movement does embody, and it times up and all of that kind of thing, does kind of embody the idea that, you know, we're kind of over the whole control over our bodies, you know, the free reign that's given to men who are harassing in a work environment. You know, yes, sex workers are taking an active part in the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm always curious about the relationship between the feminist movement in this country, particularly certain, I'll call them strident voices, who again, irony is the key word for tonight. If Groucho Marx was still with us, the duck would drop down and the word irony would pop out, who in their own way take such a damaging role fighting your industry so that they can save you. I've never been able to get over that.
Yes, we call them SWRFs, sex work exclusionary radical feminists. There's an acronym for everything.
Right.
And isn't that ironic?
Yes.
Yes, the sex work exclusionary radical feminists are absolutely determined that all sex work is harmful and all sex workers are in trouble. And, you know, I think anytime that you put the words of all of any category of thing, you're really running down a bad road. Because all of anything is not all of anything.
Right.
It's just not fair to assume that because someone is engaging in sex work that they have a drug problem or that they can't take care of their kids or you know that they've been abused when they were a child. It's just not fair to say that.
Right. And the next level of irony is that very often those folks from that group often weigh in so heavily against the patriarchy, but they are substituting their own patriarchy, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
To quote unquote fight the other patriarchy. The madness just, what is it? Sizzling powder, stop the madness? Yikes. Talk to us.
And the more radical they get, the more ugly they get, and the more difficult they make it for other women to break out of that mold. It's really very damaging what a lot of the SWRFs are doing, and they're making life hard for a lot of really good people.
Absolutely. Folks, if you're just joining us, on the line is Alex Andrews. She's a board member of SWAP, Sex Workers Outreach Project. She's also the co-founder of SWAP Behind Bars, which we'll get into in just a second. Folks, you're listening to Liberty on the Air at libertyontheair.com. Of course, my name is Pat Ford. I am filling in for that libertarian, Dan Fishman, alongside my co-host, Matt, here. It's a great conversation because, again, we're raising to the fore some real urban myths that desperately need to be challenged. Now, Alex, tell us a little bit about SWAP Behind Bars. You're really honing in on one of the most challenged communities within the sex worker family, if you will, aren't you?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And we really had no idea what we were getting into when we first started. SWAP Behind Bars was started over a Twitter fight with what turned out to be a corrections officer. And it didn't take very long, but a lot of activists were just bashing him on Twitter. And all of a sudden, I got a direct message that said, "Hey, I hate my job as much as you do." And we just started talking, and he said, "You know, you need to write some of these women that are in prison. A lot of them, you know, a lot of them have been involved in the sex industry, and they feel like that's what's keeping them in jail. A lot of them have experienced a lot of violence in prison." Just in the criminal justice system in general. And why don't you just reach out to them? So we put together a little newsletter and we sent it out to about 200 people the first month. That was May of 2016. And probably about 8 days later, our mailbox was jammed with people wanting to know more about, you know, who we are, what is sex work, what is an activist, what is Amnesty International? And they had so many questions. There are currently about 200,000 women behind bars in the U.S., and that's just in prison. And that number's on the rise. In the last 20 years, the female incarcerated population has grown by 800% in the United States. It's growing nearly twice as fast as it was as the men's population since 1985. It only accounts for about 7% of the total prison population in the U.S., but the fastest-growing population behind bars is Black women. Prostitution is one of the few crimes where women are arrested more frequently than men, but there are just exploding numbers of Black, Latino, and trans women that are going behind bars. Mm-hmm. We feel like sex workers are often subject to the revolving door approach. People that are convicted of a drug offense, or they're defending themselves in an abusive relationship or a domestic violence situation, or they commit a robbery because they want to have something to eat later on that night. Whatever it is, there's a lot of women in prison who have experience in the sex industry as survival-based sex workers, and this was the first time anyone had ever reached out to them to talk to them about their situation and to let them know that there were people on the outside with similar experiences that could help.
What women in that I forget the term you just used, sort of like we're doing it out of desperation, not quite coerced. What is your sort of thought on that? Women who are in a terrible position sort of turn to it, so I guess they can provide something.
Well, you know, we're living in a society where it's difficult for people to cycle out of poverty. We have a generational poverty situation, and until we're really ready to have a conversation about poverty, I don't think we're ready to have a conversation about who can or cannot do sex work.
Yeah, wasn't quite my question.
No,
you know, but I was just curious what your what your thoughts were, because that does sort of border close to coerced or forced into. And
because they don't have any other choices.
People who are usually coerced or forced into something usually don't have many choices.
They don't.
I was just curious what you're sort of like. Is that your ideal sort of person to? I don't want to. Like, is that something you know? Like, hey, that's great that they were doing this, or this. I understand why they did this, but I wish they could find something else. That sort of thing.
Our approach is simply no judgment. You made the decisions you made when you made them, and now we're going to talk about what you're going to do next. If you're going to go back and you're going to engage in sex work, we're going to try to help you do it as safely as possible, so that you don't run the risk of a lot of the things that can happen when you're using sex work as a means of survival. We want to help them conduct themselves as safely as possible. Sometimes that means not returning to sex work, and we're perfectly fine with helping someone stay out of sex work if that's what they want to do. It's really all about what did they want to do, not what do I want them to do. Someone who is engaged in survival sex work probably shouldn't be doing it, in all honesty. Anytime you do something that's based on, I've got to do this in order to survive, in order to survive, maybe there need to be some other opportunities afforded that person so that they could make different choices if they had the opportunity. But we're not a society that opens up a lot of opportunity to people who are marginalized and disenfranchised. And that's one of the reasons why SWAT Behind Bars is just taken off like a rocket, is because we don't really care whether that's what they did and they don't want to do it again, or that's what they didn't do but now they are going to, or, you know, we don't even consider those things when we're working with our clients. We just want to help them get to the next stage of their own goal.
Talk about some of the support services you folks have provided on a purely volunteer basis to folks looking to break out of that cycle of economic violence.
We started by sending books to, we started collecting books and sending them to prison libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first of our clients got out of prison, and she said, you know, we only get to spend 10 minutes in the library maybe once a month. So one of our founders, Catherine Coster, came up with the idea of creating Amazon wish lists. And we will create these lists for someone, and then people in our community can purchase the books for them, and they go directly to the person. They send us a list of the kind of books that they'd like to read, and we put that on their Amazon wish list, and then community members buy them. We're still doing a lot of work around donating books to county jail libraries. We recently started a project where we're encouraging people around the country to donate books in good condition to a local project, and then we donate them to a county jail. Education and information and knowledge, those are the powers that can change someone's life. Knowing that there's someone there to help, knowing that there's someone there to talk through, it makes a huge difference. We operate a community support line where sex workers or not sex workers, family members of sex workers, can call and get suggestions, some alternatives. We try to advocate for them based on, you know, what it is they're trying to do. We also have a scholarship program that we started doing in December of 2016. We had three paralegal scholarships that we gave away to people who were incarcerated. It gave them the opportunity that when they get out of jail, maybe they can undertake a different line of work. It gave them a tool. And that's what we want to do, is we want to offer them the tools and then see what they do with them.
That's great.
We're just about out of time. Alex, I want to give you a moment to promote where folks can, you know, if someone is at risk and they're listening to the show, where they can reach out to you, whether they be incarcerated. What I found fascinating was when I called SWAP's office, there is a hotline within the SWAP, main SWAP number, for folks who are incarcerated or in the midst of legal issues. How can folks find you on the web? How can they contribute? How can they support your efforts? Give us the pitch, if you will.
Okay. SWAP Behind Bars, www.swapbehindbars.com. Our community support line is 877-776-2004. You can read more about us online and see what it is that we do. You can volunteer within our community as an advocate. We are actively seeking people to educate their communities regarding sex work by tabling for SWAP USA and SWAP Behind Bars. You can look at SWAP USA and see what we're doing within the community and with our chapters at www.swapusa.org. We're here and we are available for sex workers and for community members who want to learn more about how they can make a difference in someone's life.
Right, and I want to point out, and first of all, I want to thank you for coming on and giving us this information. I want to point out that you support not only male, female, but you're actually very active in the trans community as well. And
yes, we have some wonderful trans community partners.
Right, and you've got members of the trans community on your actual board. So it
yes,
really is a collaborative effort. Alex, thank you so very much. We'll be in touch again soon. We'll continue the conversation. Folks, the hour just flew right by. I want to take this opportunity to thank Matt, and I want to thank Dan, and I want to thank John for giving me this opportunity to take over the airwaves, if you will, hijack, if you will, the Boston airwaves for one night on one of the historic, preeminent, dominant, fabulous platforms. That is the Big 68, as they used to call it, 680 WRKO. Listen, Liberty on the Air, libertyontheair.com. Saturday nights, 11 to midnight, appointment radio. Folks, we'll see you next week. Thanks again for joining us.
Good night, Skippy.